This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program is produced on Boonwurrung country. This is the sound of now on Joy 94.9.
Maya is out and proud Aussie artist, been absolutely crushing it for a hot minute now. The album Goodbye If You Call That Gone is the debut album and it's officially out. Maya, welcome. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
How's it feel? The album is out in the world.
It feels good. It feels really good to like have a release. Let it all come out of me, you know, and now I'm like, it's all everyone else to deal with. It's not mine anymore. It's your baggage.
How'd you go on like the morning it came out? Because there's a big energy shift between like the night before and then the morning, and then you can't kind of unring the bell.
Yes. Yeah. No, I felt really good, and then I cried and felt really bad, and then I felt really good again. So the nature of the album as well. So it pans, it checks.
I love this. All right. So speaking of the album, one question I have for you, and this is probably a bit left of center, but I completely acknowledge that all of your album titles and EP titles today have had amazing titles.
Oh,
I think,
thank you.
Trion, I think you called this out in one of your previous interviews as
well. Yeah, analysis paralysis kills.
Yeah, it does. So there's Don't Kiss Your Friends and Goodbye, obviously, If You Call That Gone. Tell me what's behind the anatomy of a good album title and a song title too.
I think that the album title takes a lot of time, I think. Like album EP titles, they take a minute of like figuring out the identity of the thing. There's been plenty of times where I've named it before the album has existed and then really, really thought I would stick to it. And then I get to the end and I'm like, oh, it's just not right. Usually, yeah, hundreds and hundreds of names, whereas naming a song is kind of like immediate intuition straight away. It's usually like the first thing that I put down.
Really, the first thing?
Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Okay. I'm like, I know exactly what it is.
Oh, that's awesome. But then when it comes to albums and EPs, it takes a little bit longer. There's a couple of ones that didn't make the cut. Is there any that didn't make the cut that you can share with us?
Oh my God. Abundance in an Attention Economy was one, and I just felt like it was too much.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
Well, thoughts and prayers for that title that didn't make it, but honestly,
like that one might have been connected to Redacted.
Yes, it definitely was.
How's your screen time? So for those who've not heard it, Redacted is about that feeling of scrolling the newsfeed and everything sucks. How do you like work with your screen time? Is it good at the moment? Is it bad? How do you manage that?
It's not great at the moment. Actually, surprisingly, when I wrote Redacted, my non-existent screen time, I had like deleted everything off my phone, and I think I was getting a little bit woohoo, I'm gonna live under a rock and I hate everybody kind of time, where I was like, oh, the corporations are against us, you know, and they are, but obviously promoting an album and stuff like that, I'm like, I'll lose my job if I'm off the internet. But yeah, it's pretty bad right now.
How did this record start for you? Like, what was the first song that you wrote? What was the first song that you recorded? What was the genesis where you kind of realized, oh, this is the record?
Well, I'd wanted to make an album like from the beginning. Like, it had been the dream from the beginning. And then EP after EP, I was like, hey, I'm ready. The EPs were like 7 tracks long anyway. And like, is that legal? I don't know. But it's not an album. And Taste My Tongue was actually the first song off this record that was written. And I feel like you can kind of feel that when you know it, because it fits in like a much softer world. But I definitely wanted to keep it on because I was like, you need some reprieve in these collections of songs. I can't remember exactly the order that they were written, but I do know that I was pretty sad and angry. And then at the halfway point, we wrote Girls because I was like, I need to not feel sad and angry for like 5 minutes, and we need to write something really stupid.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a line about the shape of your body, Ed Sheeran, in there.
Yeah.
You know? We got some good references.
Up and down, like I'm fucking in an elevator, I think was the
coming
lyric.
I'm coming up, as in like up and coming.
Yeah.
Artist.
Yeah.
That is an Ed Sheeran lyric.
Well, I don't know if you realize just how much that song has resonated with the queer community. I mean, here at Joy, the Melbourne Pride March goes right down that street just outside there each year. And we have our breakfast teams have these big public votes of which songs should we have our team marching to as they march down Fitzroy Street for Pride March. And I'm Here for the Girls is one of the first ones through this year.
Maybe
we didn't publicize this well enough, but people got behind that real early. It's like, yes, it's really important that we're marching to that. How does it feel, like, the way that this song's connected with community?
That's super important to me. I mean, that's like the whole reason, you know, that's why you do it. When we put that song out, I knew that I wanted it to feel like a community event, like it was for everybody else. Like I am here for the girls and the gays and the theys. Like that's what we are here for. And so we hosted like a night with Junipero in Sydney, and we did like a big gay club night, and we had like a whole bunch of different artists on. We had some drag queens and some performances and stuff, and it was a really cool way to celebrate that song and then getting to play it and seeing how happy everybody was. Like, just so awesome.
That's so cool. I have to ask a question as well, because speaking of, you know, mixing it up when you were writing and recording the album, I know that there was a post with Chloe Coydad, but also posted about kind of their recollection of, you know, recording in various living rooms, in studios, in bedroom closets around the world. Are there any particular memories that you've got of those recording moments and writing moments together that, you know, have stuck with you?
I mean, definitely the closet was a literal place that was...
It was literally in
not
there.
Not a metaphor.
It was
not
actually even in there. Yeah, one of the last songs for the album that we wrote was Tide. And I was not having a good day. I mean...
Oh, that song, though. That song. Can we dive into that song?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to have a good day when they're writing that song. But, I was feeling like the pressure of writing songs when you like wake up in the morning and you know you have to write a song, and then you sit down at a desk and you know you have to write a song, and then you're just like, this is stupid, I shouldn't be feeling this. And just having too many people in the room, too much like overstimulated, like even if there was just, I needed to be somewhere compact and small to get my feelings out. And I was like, I'm gonna go into the closet and you're not allowed in here, and I'm gonna go and be by myself. And I'm like, literally, like, and not we're not talking about a big space here. Like, couldn't barely fit the guitar in there with me.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't even considered getting the guitar in there.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about that.
No. Logistics.
Like, it's surrounded by clothes, like, really contorted. But the song came out in, like, however long the song is, you know, just, like, word for word was just like one fail swoop. And then I sort of came out of the cupboard about 3 minutes later and I was like, I have the song, here's the recording, I'm gonna go take a walk.
Oh my gosh, hot and fresh out the kitchen, literally.
I mean, and the way that this record sounds, and Tide is one of the more kind of down tempo moments on it, but even across the record, the whole thing just has this real like fullness to it. There's a fullness to the sound that, you know, Analysis Paralysis was kind of working towards, and this feels very much like a debut album project where you're making a statement. I'd love to know how you landed on this sound and how it came together. I'm assuming it wasn't all in the closet.
No, definitely not. No, that was only one moment in time for that. I think I had wanted to make something that felt, I think full is a really good word to use. Like, I think that I wanted all of the sounds to feel rounded and it feel finished and it not feel, I needed it to feel a bit more analog and not as just like computer based, and everything needs to feel real. And I'd played so many shows with my band before I'd written this album, and a lot of stuff I had written not considering playing it live. Like, I was thinking more about like writing it in a diaristic way, or writing it in my bedroom, or writing it with like one other person in a studio. Whereas this, I was like, oh, no, I'm thinking about the live experience and how it's connecting to people in a band sense, and way more thinking about the instrumentation of it all, and spending a lot more time than I have previously on just like, okay, what is the piano going to sound like in this song? Because that was really important to me. And I fought really hard to have that autonomy of like, no, I'm going to do this in the way that I want to, and I'm going to make it as lo-fi or hi-fi as I want to, and I'm not going to be like at the mercy of somebody else. And it felt like it was really collaborative, and I just got so much of my like say back. And that was the main purpose for me of this album.
Yeah. Does that kind of tie into some of the, and I know you speak about this a lot, but like having to make compromises at the start of your career, is that something that then ties into what you were able to achieve with this new album as well? Because you weren't, you know, having to kind of think twice about what other people were going to think or what other, you know, critiques you were going to get. Does that kind of tie into it as well?
Yeah, I think pretty much the whole album is inspired by that and driven by that. And I think I can be a bit of a spiteful person. So when someone tells me not to do something, the first thing I'm going to do is do it if I don't agree. If I heavily don't agree, not like don't walk in front of a train track. I'm like, maybe I'll listen to that. But when it comes to like, I'm sure that I want to do this and this pushback, I think that I can pull back really far the other way. And with this album, I just felt so much pressure from like big labels that I was with and like people that had so much of a say that I felt like I was losing control. And my way of gaining the control back was just being a bit like, screw you all, and I'm not even going to make a single, and I'm actually going to get weirder with it just in spite of everybody, and I'm going to, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm glad that I did that, and I think that I needed to be in this place with this kind of music and to feel like I'm starting again. And I think I'm now at a place where I feel grounded enough in who I am to then be able to take the advice and be able to listen to people in a more corporate sense about like, okay, well, what are your thoughts? Mm. Rather than I felt like I'd just been yelled at for years, mm-hmm. that I was like, I can take it now.
Yeah.
We're chatting with Maya, the debut album, which feels incredible to say, Goodbye If You Call That Gone, came out just last Friday. I mean, I know you are going to be deep in rehearsals for this tour now that is coming up in April with an album that was designed to be heard live. How are you feeling when you're there in the rehearsal room? Like, how's that feeling somatically in your body as all these songs you've prepared, you're now getting ready to belt out?
So good. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's really wild being like, oh my God, the plan that I had it's here. And the whole purpose of like writing a live album and you're able to play the songs and it just feels incredible. Like, I'm so excited to play these songs for people. I'm so excited for them to hear them in a live sense, in like the sort of way they're meant to be experienced. So I'd encourage anybody that's like not sure if they should come down to definitely come down and watch.
Hell yeah. Okay, so another question I have as well, man, we do ask this a little bit on the show, but something that we absolutely love finding out about our artists. Can you name at the moment three Australian and bonus points if queer artists that you are listening to a lot, if that's someone that you've collaborated with before or just someone that you cannot get enough of? Can you name three for us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the reigning queen of Australia right now, I would say, is Nina Durace.
She's, yes!
There you go.
Phenomenal.
A woman after my own heart.
Yes. Phenomenal. Amazing. She is just like so inspiring, and I think she's incredible.
And she just produced half of that Two Charm record that came out this week.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Busy woman. Yeah. Phenomenal. I've been just come across a new trio called The Stamps.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That are cool.
Yeah.
They're a little bit folk bitch trio.
Okay. Yeah.
Quite cool.
100%.
That's a recent finding of mine. And I've just been listening to a bit of Lucky. She's cool.
Amazing. Incredible.
I've heard great things.
Yeah. That's awesome.
What was I going to ask about? Oh, okay. Have a reference check for you because I heard Confessions and it's incredible. And the reference check, I'm keeping in mind, I got this right last time when I said Muse was the reference for Superior Liar. Is the reference on that Decode by Paramore?
It pretty much is.
Yes! 2 for 2, yes. Let's go! That song rules.
Thank you.
So good. Talk me through how that came together.
Well, okay, we had just moved into our new place in LA, and by new, I mean fresh to us and a very old apartment.
Right, okay. It's that kind of LA, it's lived in LA life.
Oh yeah, it's the backstory, the humble beginnings of the dusty, musty, crusty first apartment that you would never recommend to your worst enemy. We were living there and I think like barely any furniture. It was grim. And we were like, let's just set up like a mic and a guitar and then we'll figure it out. And we were like sitting across from each other, me and Chloe. sitting across from each other, and she was playing guitar and I was being short with her because I was just like needed to get something out. And I just started literally screaming, for what that chorus is, like how it hits that note. And I was
it's a real belt.
And if it's 2 a.m. in the middle of Los Angeles, to some people it might sound like you're being murdered. But
I feel like in LA that's par for the course though, isn't it? Don't people get used to that kind of shit?
I think that they did. We didn't get the cops called on us or anything like that, which we were expecting at some point. But yeah, it was just like straight out the woodwork, like it needs to be something a bit like this, like ah. And then the chorus happened. So that's the origin story of that, which was just like I knew that I wanted something that really felt like a literal release of energy, an expelling of energy. Anger needed to sound like a scream. If I could do a screamo scream, it probably would have been that, but I'm not that versed. But yeah, I wanted something that felt really intense and like tested the vocal limits of myself. And
yeah, that's incredible. Do you also find, and this is probably a question, seeing that now you're gearing up for your tour and upcoming tour, because I know you've shared the stage with some pretty big names before, Cyndi Lauper being one of them. You know, what inspiration do you take from, you know, huge powerhouse artists like that, especially in your preparations for your new tour?
Oh, I mean, so much. I took so much from that show and from talking to her, and she is just like a phenomenal, incredible woman. I mean, like 72 years old and still rocking out and rolling around on the floor. I was incredible. Like, what the hell? I want to be like that. How did I get to be like that? It was so cool. And even like, I was astounded by her patience.
Yeah.
Like she has people come up and sing with her all the time, singing Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Mm. And I think I would have been like maybe the 50th person that's done it. And the patience that she had with me to like walk me through, here's the choreography that I want you to do, babe. Wow. And here's where I want you to stand. And then you're going to come and walk over here. I was like, you are in it. Like, I know artists that have been around for 4 years that don't have the patience of you. Like, that's crazy.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. She is wild.
So we're bringing a lot of that energy to the tour.
Totally. I mean, if I could channel Cyndi, that's the vibe you want to channel.
For people who haven't seen you, you've got a tattoo across your throat there that says lucky. Is that how you're feeling right now?
Yeah, definitely. Feeling grateful, lucky for just my life in general. I think that I, as a lot of young queer kids, was quite a depressed teen child. Adult, but it gets better. It gets better. But you know, at the point where I got the tattoo, I was like in that phase of being like, you need to be reminded that you're lucky to be here. Like out of a really aggressive place of like, when I look in the mirror, I need to think that I'm like lucky to be here. Otherwise, yeah. I'm not gonna think it. And I think over the past like few years, like that has transformed so much from me having to constantly force myself to feel that, to actually feeling it and like feeling honestly really grateful and grateful for my friends and the people around me and my partner and the queer community in general and the people that show up for me so I can show up for them. Like I am totally there. I'm lucky to even have the opportunity to be able to keep building and creating and, you know, have the support system to do that, because it's hard being an artist, being in media, being in anything that's like conversing about the world and being introspective. Like it's hard,
and there's that whole cringe thing as well, if people don't want to be perceived as cringe, mm-hmm. so they just don't try, mm-hmm. and you are like, no, I'm just actually going to put it out there.
Yeah,
in spite of that.
Yeah, I think trying is the coolest thing that you can do.
100%. Hey, we're so lucky to have had you in. Thank Maya, you. Thanks so much for joining us on The Sounds of Now. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I mean, we got the pick of the board. What song do you want to play now?
I didn't know that I could do that.
You can do that.
I mean, you're the one telling your narrative. You tell us what you want.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. I haven't even thought about that. Can I see the song?
Yes, you can see the song. This might be, what about picking a song that you're the most excited to play on tour?
I took our conversation to a little bit of a dark place. So I feel like maybe Taste My Tongue is a very nice, uplifting way to take the rest of the day.
We love a love song. Maya, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Find the full playlist on the Joy website, joy.org.au/thesoundofnow.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.